My name is Teresa. I'm an alcoholic. Grateful to be here, grateful to be sober because of a loving God. Thank you so much. Y'all having me out here. I'm in Virginia, right? Sometimes I don't know where I'm at. Just nothing changes like back in the day. I love when I go international and you go to customs. Where are you going? I don't know. Where are you staying? I don't know. What are you here for, Alcoholics Anonymous? Sure, you're so right. Sure am. Oh, thank you, Billy. All you guys, the love, the warmth, the camaraderie. You're not a glum lot, that's for sure. It's beautiful out here. I do want to say it does bring back memories. It feels good. I had a moment where I wish I would have been able to call my brother. My brother passed away. We lived in seminary for 5 years. I moved to Sen in St. Paul, Minneapolis. And just being here, you know, so guess where I'm at right now? You know, the oldest church. You know, that's y'all keep saying it. Every time I leave, a chance you get, I run into somebody. No, this is the oldest church. Yeah, pretty much is a big old black out there. Y'all seem really proud of it. So I would have loved to be able to call my brother and be like, guess what? This is the oldest church. And, you know, no, what's the word? Not the oldest church, the oldest continuous working church. I mean, that's a big difference. So it's an honor to be here. But it just brings up memories of that. And the property, so this is pretty cool. Thank our speakers. Thank you so much for warming up the crowd. Hopefully I get to put a bow on it. I always have a share before I share. If you don't mind, it helps me out a little bit. And that is that I'm always uncomfortable. This is awkward and intimidating. I think I'm always nervous and frightened. I feel bad sometimes before I'm getting ready to speak because people try to talk to me and I'm so antisocial because I'm so nervous. So they're talking, I'm like, So, you know, it's a self-centered experience I'm having, but whatever they're talking about, I'm like, I don't care. I'm only thinking about me right now. I feel bad. And sometimes I go to a meeting. Yeah, I speak a lot, but I'll go to some meetings and they'll be like, hey, you speaking tonight? I'm like, no, we're just hanging out and talking to everybody. Asking how you're doing. Nope, is that me? So I am, and I think it's a good thing. Keeps me humble. I believe the day comes that I can't wait to get up here. I probably got to sit down somewhere. But despite the fact that I'm uncomfortable and this is awkward and intimidating, somebody did it for me. And this is a life and death errand. And I cannot give back enough what Alcoholics Anonymous is giving me. And I remember listening to women and men from podiums like this. And I don't know if they're stuck, bless you. I don't know if their sponsor made them do it or they didn't want to do it. I just know they did it. And they carried a message that just shifted and changed my whole trajectory of my participation in this program. My sobriety date is March 29, 1990. I found a sweater that says it. Is this not cool or what? Yes, I had to get it. 1990? Really? I just had a birthday, March 29th, 1990, but for the grace of God. Grace of God, sponsorship, fellowship, 12 steps, 12 traditions, 12 concepts. It takes a village to be able to raise a girl like me in these rooms. I always say, without you, there is no me. So thank you so much. I want to welcome our new friends. Welcome home. We've been praying for you. There is a moment of silence and prayer, and it takes place in every meeting all over the world, and that prayer is for you. We ask you to keep coming back. It's only 5 minutes before the miracle happens, and let us love you so you can learn to love yourself, and it's going to be all right. I heard you don't have to take a drink again if you want to. More importantly, if you don't want to, The program works. This is my first time in the program. I think it's important to mention that. There are some of us who do come and stay. I have yet to go out, and yet means you're eligible too. So I'm not exempt from the possibility. Even when I was new, my sponsor used to have me go up to people who relapse. We call you our scouts in our home group. We call you our scouts. And I would have to go up with a notebook, like a reporter and a pen, and be like, excuse me, I understand you relapsed recently. Can you tell me what you didn't do? And I would write that down. There's this guy, he's here hopefully to save Reggie, but he hated because he was in and out a lot. And he was like, I hate it every time. Here she comes again. Again. Can you tell me? He's like, oh. Like, maybe you should be making notes of this, Reggie. That's a good note on you. But it does. It helps me to stay sober. We were talking about that last night. I remember telling my cousin, why does anybody go out again if this program works? And she was like, think about it. If nobody went out, you'd probably be one of those people saying, how do you guys know nobody's ever tried again? So we want to thank those of you who are scouts letting us know. Because not everybody makes it back. But those of you who do, thank you for coming back and letting us know. And it's not, nothing has changed. Not working. It's only gotten worse, so thank you. I get an opportunity in a short period of time to share what it was like, what happened, and what we're like now. If you're new, there's a reason for that. In our literature, in the doctor's opinion, he talks about a message of depth and weight. It is the language of the heart. It is the music I have found in these rooms. No one else has been able to capture my attention the way you've captured mine. No one. It's the one thing that only you and I can do for one another. There's music that happens here, and the way I see it, it goes past our disease that is centered in our thinking, and it goes straight into your heart, and once the seed's been planted, you can't treat the same again. You guys captured me. And I give you a reader's digest. You know, I don't get opportunity to give you all the nuts and bolts of all that my sponsor had the privilege of hearing all of it. But as I share with you in a general way, I invite you to listen to similarities and not the differences. And you get to ask yourself questions like, that happened to me. I felt that way too. And most importantly, perhaps this program can work for me. As the story goes, I've heard a lot of stories in these rooms. I'm born addicted. I like listening to our speakers when you remember that first time you got the effect or the first time you drank. I came in this world loaded. My mother is an alcoholic. My mother died a couple of years ago with 38 years of sobriety. And so mommy drank. According to my mother, I'm a product of rape. My father had a different perspective on that situation. And I was born a preemie, and I was born addicted. Mommy drank and did everything. She tried to abort me and get rid of me. And she left me in the hospital. And it was my dad and my grandmother that brought me home. And what they said was, I wouldn't accept milk, formula, or juice, water. I only accepted alcohol. So that's what they gave me. And what they learned from the doctors is to wean me off. If you know what I mean? Anybody's water, you got to wean them off. You just can't cold turkey a baby. So their intention was to wean me off. But this is really, I believe, where the whole dynamic happened for me was they really wanted mommy to look at me, touch me, acknowledge me, something. So they came up with this idea to leave me alone in the house with mom. And mommy said I started crying and she kept saying, shut that thing up. Why am I hearing that thing? But she told my father, you wanted it, you can keep it. Keep it away from me. I don't want to hear it and I don't want to touch it. And so she said she was like trying to put the pillow, you know, la, 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 you know, to shut out the noise. But I kept screaming. So she went into the living room and she discovered she was alone with me. And her knee-jerk reaction was she took a pillow and she began to smother me. And she was like, I can get rid of her once and for all. And it'll be their fault, right? Because they left me alone in the house. So mommy said she started smothering me. And for whatever reason, she said she remembered hearing them say, if you give her alcohol, she'll stop crying. And from that moment on, my mother set a precedent in that home that a bottle of alcohol was to remain in my mouth. And the only time it was to be removed was to be refilled. And so I drank every day, all day, for 24 years of my life until I came into these rooms. Talk about an alcoholic life being a normal one. Now, what mommy didn't account for, and certainly she wasn't aware of it at the time, and I'm an infant, so why would I, know? What she didn't account for, she was hoping that I'll die from alcohol poisoning, which I should have. But what she didn't know was alcoholism. That I had an abnormal reaction. And so instead of my body rejecting it, refusing it, and dying as a result of it, I welcomed it, I sucked it up, and I demanded more of it. I'm real clear today what I suffer from. I remember I wanted to blame my alcoholism on my mother. Not once did I make a conscious choice to drink. But I understand when I say I'm an alcoholic, it's not because of consequences. It's not because I drank a lot. It's because I have an abnormal response to alcohol, like somebody who's allergic to peanuts or strawberry. And people tend to equate someone breaking out in hives as the allergy, and that's not what makes it an allergy. What makes it an allergy is that's an abnormal reaction when they eat peanuts or strawberries. Everybody else eats peanuts and strawberries, and that doesn't happen to them. And so I'm an alcoholic because to give an infant alcohol and I survive, how can I dispute that I don't have the allergy of the body? As I got older, I got to experience the obsession of the mind, and why would I not have that? And what the obsession of the mind looked like is I spend the rest of my life always thinking about how to get somewhere I'm not to. Now, I'm going to use some adjectives that I received from you just to give you this reader's digest of how I lived and breathed and existed on alcohol. And I can only use these adjectives, and I got them from you. I didn't have them before I came here. To kind of sum it up a little bit. You say I come from a dysfunctional family. As far as I know, this is my family to this day. I'm Puerto Rican from New York. I grew up half the year in Puerto Rico and half the year in the island of New York. Most of my family members are pimps, dealers, hustlers. We're mafia, not even gangsta. And they're also police officers, politicians, and priests. They're all the same to me. But you call them dysfunctional. They crack me up to this day. I don't get to hang out with them too long, but when I do, they actually make me laugh. The things we talk about at the table about feds and stuff like that is hysterical. It starts rubbing on me quickly. But sometimes I try to share with them the program, they be talking about stuff. And I love it because they listen. My cousins will listen. They'll be like, I don't know, Terry. I'm like, never mind. But you call it dysfunctional. In our family, the only person that's considered to have a problem is somebody who doesn't have teeth or doesn't have a job. So as long as you have teeth and a job, you could. And I remember my cousin Nancy, she would be upset because everybody always got on her. I'm like, just get a job and teeth, Nancy, and then we'd be alone. Like, hello. That's all you gotta do. Most of my family members died from cirrhosis of the liver, kidney failure, falling down, cracking your skull, OD, getting shot. And when you die in our family, you put your drink or your drug of choice in the coffin with you, and we take pictures. We celebrate your death and we cry when a baby is born. I remember when my aunt died in Puerto Rico, I swear to you guys, she did not look right until I put that can of Budweiser in her hand in that coffin. All of a sudden, I swear she smiled when I coughed into her. Before that, she looked really unhappy. And I've had uncles that had diabetes and aunts with gangrene, and you got to cut their legs off because they're not going to stop drinking. And I remember going to the doctor with my uncle and telling him he has to stop drinking. And I'm like, now? He ain't got no legs. Why would he stop drinking now? Leave him alone. You know what I'm saying? I don't think he got legs. You know what I'm saying? Stop drinking now. You got your legs amputated. That don't make no sense. Let me see the little giraffe. dramatic. What's it? But you call that dysfunctional. My family. The other adjective you gave me, I grew up hearing you're stupid, you're nothing, you're nobody, you're insignificant. We hate you, you disgust me, you'll always be an idiot. Who are you and why are you still here? And you call that verbal abuse. All I know is that's the way they talk to me. What's the other adjective you gave? People, they beat me, they punch me. I've been pistol whipped. I've been poked with knives and cigarettes. My brother shot me in the butt. He said he was aiming at the chair, but I was sitting on it. I was like, oh, you know, you said I was aiming at the chair. I was like, I'm on the chair. Using the chair as target practice while I'm sitting. You know what I'm saying? The weapons got taken away from him. He was so upset. It was all my fault. You call that physical abuse. That's what they did to me. And what's the other adjective he gave? I lost my virginity at 5. Men and women took advantage of my body sexually. It was as though there was an announcement or a memo that went out and said, she is insignificant and unimportant. You can let out all of your frustrations, your deviances, your pedophileness on her, because she doesn't matter. She doesn't matter. Call that sexual abuse? What's happening to me? Now, as horrible as that sounds, I was not present for my experience. Now, I know some people have survived those experiences without alcohol, but it was alcohol that carried me through that. See, I don't know if alcohol talked to you, but it talked to me. And it said, if nobody loves you, I love you. I got you. You ain't got to worry about none of this. It's you and me against the world. It's all good. Alcohol was see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. I didn't feel nothing. I didn't see nothing. But you see me as a child. You see pictures. I'm loaded in every single one of them. But I'm always smiling. I'm laughing. I've seen therapists, two-way mirrors, 8 blocks, big sister program, mentorship program. We go to upstate New York, ride donkeys, make pies with some woman named Bunny. None of that mattered. It was good for them. Did nothing for me. Alcohol was my friend. It was my lover, my companion, my therapist, my nurse. It was everything to me. It was the oxygen that the breath that I took. It was the blood that ran through my veins. I didn't start learning about food, the four food groups, so I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. After a while, my grandmother tried to give me food with she started out with, which I tried this. That took a lot of time. She used to take grapes, green grapes, and take the skin off, soak them in wine so I can eat. That was the first thing I started eating. And then the other thing she did, which I think you call it a screwdriver now, is she used to take an orange, and she would open up the top, and then she would put the alcohol inside the orange, and I would suck it, right, like that. And then open it. We call it carne. I don't know what you call the inside. It doesn't sound like pulp or something. I don't like the way that sounds. I like carne. It's more like the meat of the orange. And I would eat that. And then eventually it was always soft foods like oatmeal. So she gradually tried to introduce foods. There was a lot of arguments and fights that went on in that house trying to get the bottle out of my mouth. My grandmother lost out on that fight and my dad lost out. And they left. And they left me with mommy. I always took care of my mother. My brother was abusive. Mommy never grew up. She was an alcoholic. And see, when I look at alcoholism, I look at mommy. She would pass out. She was a hot mess. She was in and out of mental institutions. She was suicidal. Recently, I've been going through, I have everybody who's died. I have all this stuff in my house. And I'm going through all the letters that my grandmother and mommy were writing in Puerto Rico and stuff, whatever they would visit. And every single one of them is, have Terry do this, and where's Terry at? Can Terry handle this? That's me. I was like, wow. And I was like 8, 10. It's always been like that. So why would I have a problem if I'm managing everybody else's life? If they totally rely on me to take care of all their affairs. When mommy got Alzheimer's, she used to write notes. This is indicative of how we live. She would write notes so she could remember things. And I always saw her writing her little notes. And one time she was with my cousin and we had to remember something. I said, look for that little pad that mommy has that she writes notes. And in there, probably the information's in there. And you hear her going through the pages and she's laughing. And I'm like, what? She's like, listen to this. This is what's in her notepad. Ask Terry. Find out from Terry. Tell Terry. Have Terry. That's all that was in the notepad. She wasn't like, taking notes about anything. It was all have me, Terry. Have Terry do this. Have Terry do that. Ask Terry. And that's how I lived for 24 years. I go to my school reunions, my high school. I went to Catholic school for 11 and a half years. I put a uniform on and a smile on my face, and I said, the Our Father and the Hail Mary. I did my confession on Saturdays, and I sang on Sundays. I took my communion. Who got a problem? I love my uniform. I also lived in two worlds. At the age of about 5, they put me with a glass of water and a candle and a stranger across from me, and they said, read them. I think you people call it born with a veil or something. And I would sit down and I would begin reading this person, like, you know what I mean, intuitively. And then my dad and what he told me later on and my grandmother, they couldn't take the bottle out of my mouth and do anything to the conditions in which I was living in. But what they could do is introduce a spiritual way of life. That somehow, someday, that'll probably save me. Isn't that something? And so what they started doing was teaching me meditation, prayer, spiritualism. You know what I mean? The sanctity of earth, wind, fire. So I would do that, and I would go into the world of spirit, and it was so beautiful there. It was so kind and loving and compassionate. And then I would come to this world and it was like lions and tigers and bears. Oh my. So alcohol allowed me to live in the physical world. And then I would go into the land of the spirit and I didn't require alcohol. It was beautiful there. But I had to come back here. And when I go to my grammar school reunion or people contact me through Facebook or high school, I thought, because everybody always told me what a horrible person I was, I thought I was this horrible person. But when, and every time I get anybody from the past, I have no memory. I have 24 years of my life that's a blackout. It's only been through the years of my sobriety, more and more has been revealed. My brother used to be my memory. So a lot of times if something would come up, I would call Tony and he would fill in the, you know, fill in the gaps. So a lot of my, what it was like story is other people's stories. And so I would go to the school reunions and I would say to them, can you tell me about me? So a lot of times they come with pictures and they tell me stories. I remember one girl was like, how is your best friend? I could not remember her. Then after a while I was like, oh, I see bangs and big eyes. She was like, that's me. You know, everybody gets excited. That was me. And anytime anybody looks for me from the past, I do. I tell them, I feel bad. I'm like, how do I let them know I don't know them? And they're so excited to find me. And I'm like, can you just tell me about me a little bit? It seems to be the consensus is that I was very worldly. I was always laughing and smiling. I was spiritual and extremely kind and giving. So even that I don't remember, and that compartmentalized that. And why wouldn't I be? You see, not everyone who comes into Alcoholics Anonymous is like a bull in a china store. We have variances, right, of people in these rooms. And I attract a lot of women or young women who have been abusees. I came to you in a state of victim consciousness. When you've been experiencing abuse as long as I have, I don't make no waves. I don't start no problems with nobody. As a matter of fact, I'm living like having Harry Potter's cloak. God forbid you notice that I'm in the room. So I'm saying, of course I'm a chameleon. I just want to blend into the world so you don't notice me. Because the moment anybody notices me, you're going to hurt me. So no, I had no problems with no one. Of course I was kind. I was loaded all the time. I felt nothing. I saw, you know what I'm saying? So I was always like, I mean, it used to scare them. Some, you know, they tell me some of them were scared. They knew things were going on. I lived like in that movie, Death Becomes Her. I would have bones sticking out. They're like, your bone is sticking out. You know what I mean? And I'm like, really? Put it back. You know, like, when did that happen? Oh, gee, you know? And I'm like, something's not right about that. This is not normal. I remember my first fifth set with my sponsor. I refer movies a lot because movies help me. It's so visual. But I remember my sponsor after doing my fifth step, it was like Good Will Hunting. She was like, it's not your fault. I was like, why are you talking to me? I was like, that's weird. Why are you saying that? It's not your fault. She was like, we need a moment of silence. Like, that was wrong. You know what I'm saying? And yeah, my sponsor was like, that was just, and I did my inventory, that inventory, like, of course, the fourth column, are you serious? It's always my fault. I know people struggle with that. For me, absolutely, I take complete ownership of everything. Everybody made it very clear. I beat you, I rape you, I hurt you because of you. My sponsor was like, we need a minute. That was not okay. And I know it says anger is a dubious luxury for most people, but for you, I need you to be pissed for at least a week. She gave me that as, you know, as an exercise. And I did it robotically, but I did it. So I had to write letters, but not, you know, send them. But I had to go around going, I am angry. I am perturbed. I am very upset. So she's like, we need a minute, boy, because that, yeah, my sponsor, my inventory, she was like, yeah, no. Mm-mm. When I went to make amends, that's why I guess you when I have people who struggle about making amends, I'm like, are you kidding? About 95% of my amends was to people who hurt me. And you hurt people and you have a problem making amends? I went to them because I needed to be free. The inventory helped me. I don't know about you, but there was an area in that paragraph, there's a paragraph and it says we squander the hours. That people actually have the ability to kill us. I don't know about y'all, but when I read that, I was like, that was my way out. You mean to tell me that if I let one more minute, hour, or day go by, that they rent space in my mind, my body, and my spirit, I give them permission to rape me over and over again? Where's the pen and paper? Free of you. That I live in terror. That I got no self-worth, no self-esteem. I remember saying, if I write self-esteem one more time, it's the one not even happened. What an eye-opening experience. This program is about being empowered. I came to you very disempowered. I had no identity. I had no name. I was nothing. I was nobody. I was insignificant when I crawled in here. So how did I get to you? Because, see, I lived my life with alcohol like it was the way to be. And at no time did I ever consider giving it up. I didn't do a New Year's resolution. I didn't say, tomorrow's going to be different. This is the way it is. I got emancipated at the age of 14. I was a grown woman at 14. My man was 26. He beat me on a daily basis, and you couldn't have told me that wasn't love. That's my man. And it was only through the program and watching the Lifetime channel that I called my sponsor, and I was like, that wasn't my boyfriend. He kidnapped me from the park. That was my kidnapper. I was there for 3 years. I thought he was my boyfriend. More and more would be revealed. I was watching the Lifetime channel. I told my sponsor, that wasn't my boyfriend. He kidnapped me. But I was like, that's my man. No, I was held hostage in the house for 3 years. That's my boyfriend. I need to be free of that. By the time I got old, I began to live like Michelle Pfeiffer on Scarface. That's why I refer to movies all the time. How did I end up with you? How did I get here? Mommy needed to be with you. I heard a lot of stories in these rooms. Thank God you told me to listen to similarities and not the differences. But here's a place that I believe most of us end up meeting. Despite where we come from and how we met alcohol and how we lived our life. Here's a particular point in the crossroad where we all pretty much end up. And that is, for whatever reason, at the age of 24, alcohol betrayed me, abandoned me, and left me emotionally retarded with no coping skills. That is a game changer. You say it stops working. What does an alcoholic like me do if I can't get drunk and I can't get sober? That's the worst place to be. Incomprehensible demoralization is a whole lot of things. If I can't get drunk or I can't get sober, that's a game changer. I don't mind having consequences of drinking when I don't notice. You know, we come in here and we start talking about, oh my God, I was a terrible mother. And the things I used to do, I'm like, sanity is starting to return because you don't know you in it till you out of it. When you in it, that don't faze nobody. Maybe these moments of remorse, but they're short-lived. Selective amnesia. But the days become dark when I begin to notice. When I'm now present for my experience and I can't check out from it. Now I can hear the name calling. I can see the harm you're causing me. I can feel the pain, you know what I mean, that you're inflicting upon me, and I can't shake it off. I noticed the look of disgust on my grandmother's face, and I couldn't shake it off. And I noticed that daddy stopped talking to me. When did daddy stop talking to me? And more importantly, why do I care? Y'all talk about burning bridges. I never burned bridges. I also didn't establish any to burn any. Now I want to know where everybody was at. My bottom lasted 6 months. Some of y'all do it for years. It was like a haunted house. You know what that is to go into a bar? I know you ugly, but I order a drink, and by the time I have that drink, you ain't ugly no more. But the most horrible thing is to go into a bar, order a drink, and you still ugly? That's a game changer. And then I order another drink, and not only are you still ugly, I still go home with you? That's a problem. Problem. That's a whole other dynamic. You know what I'm saying? At this point, I invite death into my life. That's my only option. I was trying every combination so I can get flatlined again. It was as though I had been living in a coma, and I'm now resuscitated, and I'm born into this thing you call life. I had never been here. That's probably why the babies be screaming when they're born. I'm like the baby being born at the age of 24. Seriously, I'm like, so I could get flatlined again, go back into a coma, but no matter what I did, I was still present for my experience. So the best thing I could do was to invite death into my life. And I believe it's a cold thing when you invite death in your life and death don't even take you out. Man. I end up doing what I call the aimless walk, the walk with no purpose, no agenda, no destination. It's just a walk. And I ended up in a church. That's all. I was telling this gentleman on Parsons Boulevard. I was in Queens, New York. And every time I go to New York, I do that walk, and it's not a straight line. I don't know how I ended up in that church. The door was red and it was heavy. There's metal on the handles. And I remember I stepped inside. It was a heavy door. And I stepped inside. And when I got in, I don't know if there was mass going on or if there were people there. From the moment I went in, I felt a presence, but I distinctly knew it was separate from me. And I didn't think it was tangible, but it was just, I feel that way sometimes when I come into the rooms. You know, in the meeting, it's like, and I said a prayer that's different than any other prayer. Here is where I believe the gift of desperation and the window of the grace of God collide with one another. In the 12 and 12, it talks about only an act of providence to help the John lightning. Isolation, bewilderment, desperation, like that. Ugh! And I said, God, please allow me to feel the peace that I feel in this church inside of me. I just wanted one moment for my head to shut up. My skin to stop crawling and for my stomach to stop turning, yo. I said, I lost my hustle, man. Oh, you know, that's not fun. That ain't nothing cute about that no more. I'm sorry. That's alcoholic torture. That is misery. That's why I'm not mad at anybody. Drinking is still fun and all is well. Have one for me. I ain't mad at you. Next time you're gonna be like, one for you, Teresa. Cheers. Go for it. Those days were over. I had no idea that prayer was gonna change my life. I didn't even know what I was praying to or if anything was listening to me. I left there. I went to my father's house. What came out of my mouth was amazing. I had never said this before to anybody. I said, Daddy, help me. Now, I ain't no punk. You see, there's rules where I come from. I'll help you all day long. What you need, Papa? You want something? I got you. Because you're going to owe me for the rest of your life. You follow me? And when I come back to collect, you better be ready to pay up. So I was starved before I asked anybody to help me. So where'd that come from? Daddy helped me. Was God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself? I never asked for help. I will starve before I ask somebody for help. When my father looked at me and he said, with all the love that a father can have for his daughter, we talk about powerlessness. He said, you're standing in the middle of a crossroad. And there's three directions you're headed. You're so close to them, you could taste them and smell them. And that's jails, mental institutions, and death. But there's another road. It's called recovery. You don't know anything about it, and neither do I. But if you give it a try, and if it doesn't work out, the other three will be waiting for you. Do you know that that fact remains true to me to this day? And I went out to sunny California. I got on a Greyhound bus where I thought everybody was sober. I thought California was a sober state. I think they said a sober state too. I thought California was a sober state. And that was because my mother was sober and my cousin. My cousin was my mother's Eskimo. She found her eating out of garbage cans in Venice Beach, cleaned her up and brought her to the rooms. They had been sober 4 years before I came here. But I used to come to visit, and they would bring me to the meetings. And I would drink before, during, and after. They would go to, like, these sober events, and I would drink before, during, and after. There was a woman that used to come and visit me in New York. She was very strange. That's Michelle P. And she'd just be like, how you doing? I was like, it's very weird. but I remembered you people. I remembered your smiles, your laughter, the warmth, and the camaraderie that you have with one another. I remember that you never shunned me. Roll your eyes at me, suck your teeth at me, or try to shove a pamphlet down my throat. And for that, I'm truly grateful. Had you had done any of that, I probably would have tried to figure out how to die out there before I prove you right. I detoxed on that Greyhound bus. I had my last drink in El Paso, Texas. There was a man on that bus that saved my life and the life of everybody else on that bus. But could you imagine? I was having DTs. I had not been without a drink in my body since fetus. I was sick. More people died from alcohol detox than anything else. I was sick. And he took me around the bus depot and he ordered me a drink. I couldn't hold it, so he held it to my mouth. I was shaking so bad. I remember I slopped it up like a dog that had been out of water. I was sick. I believe you saved my life. And so I arrived in downtown Los Angeles on March 29, 1990, wearing a size 1 pair of pants. I still see her. Ooh, I still see her. Oh, my. Oh. 4 months pregnant. Didn't have a heartbeat by the time I got there. That was the fourth child I had lost. I lose all my babies. To this day, I go to the doctor. I'm reminded how damaged my insides are. Wearing a size 1 pair of pants, 2 pants underneath. My mother picked me up. and took me directly to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got sober in South Central Los Angeles. We went to Crenshaw Llano. We walked into that room. It was upstairs. There was a bunch of windows. And we walked in. We came halfway in, and mommy turned around to leave. And I asked her, "Where are you going?" She said, "As far as I can go with you." And she turned me over to the very people who saved her life. Mommy left. She can't help me. I could play off of her guilt. Y'all told her to stay away from me. And she turned me over to you. And I believe the one who laid the cement at my feet, the anchor, when I got here, I always mention her. I still hear her, and that's Marcy. There was a woman named Marcy. She's a little petite Puerto Rican woman like myself. She walked straight up to me with conviction, with certainty and clarity and unapologetically. You know what I mean? She walked and like I see Marcy was just, you know what I mean? Like clear. You know what I'm saying? And she walked straight up to me. She said, "Hey, baby girl, we've been praying for you. God don't make no junk, baby girl. You deserve to be here. You a child of God." And she took her hands and she put it in my face. And she brought me close to her. I don't think anybody had ever looked at me. Ever looked at me. Okay, she brought real close to her. And she said, "You got a beautiful light inside of you, baby. And we just got a clean house for that light to shine." I still hear her. You know what's interesting about that? Here is this total stranger is going to say something to me completely contrary to anything I had heard. Maybe my dad and my grandmother said it, but it was muffled by all the other noise. But this complete stranger tells me something, and I believed Marcy. What light does she see in me? What does she mean, God don't make no junk? Isn't that extraordinary that I believe this woman? That I wasn't junk. And my name is Teresa, and that I mattered. You would think that I would reject that. 24 years. You would think I would be like, this lady's nuts. It was as though there was a no truth. Do you know what I mean? Of what she was saying. Thank God she took advantage of this moment of clarity, of this desperation, of the grace that God had lifted me up and brought me into these rooms. And it was the old timers that began to spoon feed me this program. I always say I feel like a baby in a baby basket left at the doorsteps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been adopted by Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been raised by the old timers and the people in these rooms. I lived in the rooms. I came to emotionally an infant. I barely knew my name. I didn't know how to walk, how to talk, how to eat. I knew nothing. The patience they had with me. She sat me in the front and she said, "Sit down, shut up, and listen. You would take the cotton out of your ears, you put it in your mouth, the best thing we got through here. And I want you to examine your relationship with alcohol, yours. Because the very first step is to concede to your innermost self that you are truly alcoholic. Well, I don't even know what alcoholic is. I had to listen to you." That's why in the big book, in the preface, it says, "We hope that you will pause and read one of the stories in the back of the book." What is alcoholism? How can I just say, "My name is Teresa, I'm an alcoholic"? I don't even know what it is. And I began to listen to you guys talk about things. And I'm like, "What are you telling me? That's not normal. What are you saying to me right now? We don't have to live like you guys have no idea. It was my, what are you talking about? I have generations of this. That my body is mine and it's sacred. That they, I don't know. I would say maybe I'm very Latina. I'm very Telemundo. I don't know if you got Puerto Ricans or Latinos around me. But we're very dramatic people. They gave me a sponsor. I didn't pick her, interview her, hire her, fire her. I know nothing about that. They told me this woman is your sponsor. And all I needed to know was that she had a working knowledge of the books and the set. Personality had nothing to do with it. I love the traditions. I learned the traditions long before the steps. The traditions keep me safe. I'm a member because I say I am. I have a desire. They still make fun of me in my home group. I used to walk around going, I'm a member. I have a desire. I don't like you either. But you need to help me. So they still mess with me. They're like, Teresa, I'm a member. I tell you this, I mean, it was my experience when I went to the meeting in the Valley, which is different from South Central. I went to that meeting, and again, it's the traditions. And I raised my hand at that meeting. They still make fun of me a unit A about this. But I raised my hand and I was like, okay, I don't care if you KKK. You helping the Negro today. Because I'm a member. I swear, they were like, Jesus, we're not KKK. I was like, you look like it. I'm like, you look like it. And I saw the sign say AA, not KKK. So you happy? They still make fun of me and you today about that. But that tradition kept me safe enough to be, it doesn't matter who you are in this room. I am a member. I have a seat. And you can't throw me out. Anywhere I go, anywhere in the world, I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I matter. That's safe to me when every other place in the world determines whether I could be included or not. I learned principles before personality, and it wasn't your personality I had to set aside, it was mine. I grew up very Latina, Puerto Rico. I went to school with Puerto Ricans. I live with Puerto Ricans. I came to AA, boy, if you don't eat rice and beans and listen to salsa and watch Telemundo, I got nothing to talk about to you. And they told me that's none of my business. I'm not interested in what job you have, what car you drive, what school you went to, what sports you're into. Not interested. None of my business. Are you an alcoholic? You want to get sober? That's my business. Kept me safe from tearing you apart of your differences with me. No dues or fees. I get to come here. I don't have anything in my pockets. Nobody was running anything. Even though there are people, if you're new, you're going to find people who think they're governing. There's some bleeding deacons. There's some AA police people. I mean, they've been funny. And people think they're running stuff, and we just be like, keep coming back. It's not funny. You know, I remember this one gentleman was like, yes, the traditions are laws and rules and people are not supposed, I don't know, it was something somebody was saying, this person's not supposed to govern and they're not supposed to do that. I'm like, okay, well, let's start with you trying to govern them. You know what I'm saying? Isn't that governing too? Like, you let everybody be and you'll find out. That you ain't running nothing. But it's gonna take a minute. Just like you think you are. It's fine. I love the traditions. My sponsor began to give me a working knowledge of the steps in the book, and I was taught that this was a new way of life. That it was gonna become a working part of my mind and my body. I put down the drink and picked up the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got no gray area, folks. I got no in between. I got no other point of reference. Either I'm living the alcoholic life or I'm going to live this spiritual one. You see, I was fascinated by the higher power that you found. I'm very clear that alcohol was my higher power. Alcohol told me when to get up in the morning and when to go to bed at night. Where I was going to live, where I wasn't going to live. If I was in a relationship, I was not. And who I was in a relationship with. If I was going to work, if I wasn't. It cracks me up. Alcoholics is the one group of people that cannot tell me they have an issue with a higher power. I have newcomers that got issue with a higher power. Oh, no, you're talking about religion. Because if you're willing to let alcohol or drugs determine every waking moment, oh, that's your higher power, honey. You willing to give up everything for it? You know what I'm saying? What you mean you ain't got no higher power? I had one and it stopped working. I needed a new one. Isn't that the way the language they use in there? We have a new employer. Who's the old one? A new director. Who's the old one? That checked me out. Who's the old one? Alcohol. And I was impressed with the higher power you found here. See, I also hear some people say, and it'll change. I joke a lot with my sponsees and with people in general. And one day things will change. I always say, don't hold me to everything I'm telling you. Because after doing uncovering, discovering, and discarding, I do it with my sponsors. I'm like, you know what I told you last week? That was deep, right? And no longer applies.
Yeah,
got new awareness on that one. But it sounded good. I swear I knew what I was talking about. They used to send that more and more of you to be real. So this might change, but so far this has been the case for me. I hear people say God does stuff without my permission. Yeah, that's what people say. God does this without my permission. That's interesting. What impressed me with the higher power, you hadn't needed your permission. You see, alcohol took things away from me without my permission. They took my virginity away without my permission. I've had a lot of things taken away from me without my permission. Some people tell me they love me today and they hate me tomorrow. They have nothing to do with me. They don't take my vote. Cancer took away my brother without my permission. Now I'm the advanced directive and I decide whether we resuscitate again or we take him off that machine. But really, he's brain dead. So is that really my permission? Parkinson's took away my dad without my permission. Did I tell him, hold on, daddy, I'm not ready for you to die? Was that really my permission? He was dying. You understand? Alzheimer's took away my mother without my permission. My brother was a single dad and he had two boys and I helped raise these boys. And when he died, their mother showed up and said, those are my kids. You drop them off at my house and you mind your business and you stay away from us. She didn't ask my permission. I got sponsees. I'm the best sponsor on earth. I found another sponsor. I want nothing to do with you. They didn't ask my permission. I lived at a house, loved the house. Oh my God, I was so happy there. It was going to be their retirement home. Oh, the rent was reasonable. Turns out we need our home back. You got 60 days to move. They didn't ask my permission. I can start a company, start a job, do great. Now we run it. Now we own it. You got to go. Ain't nobody asked my permission. I'm driving this car. I love this car. Somebody blindsides me, demolished it, totaled it. I got no more car. They asked my permission? I don't think so. There's a lot of things that has happened in life without my permission. But the higher power that you found, the Alpha, the Omega, the creator of all things and all people, of the heaven and the earth, to the smallest insect, to the stars, to the heavens, needs my permission. I'm impressed. If it didn't need my permission, why am I making a decision on three? If God is doing you with my permission, why do I have to say I make a decision to turn my will in my life? Just handle my life. I was impressed. Everything throughout this book, it says, we let God discipline us in the simple way outline. That means we let him. I now enter into a partnership and a collaboration with this infinite power that cannot fail. But it needs my permission. Why would I ask for God to remove my fears if you don't need my permission? Why would I say, take all of me, good and bad? What will you have me be? What will you have me do if you don't need my permission? I was blown away by the higher power you have here. I want to know that power. Because all those other powers outside of me that I've reached outside of myself that just take things without my permission, disempower me. But this power empowers me. The power of choice with collaboration. This power is always waiting with open arms. I think the only one that comes close to understanding what that is, now I'm a titi. My nephews love their titi. I do not act, I don't pretend to be their mother, even though people differ with me. I raised them till they were like 14. They're now 26 and whatever. But only parents can come close to understanding. You create this child and bring them in this world. You give them every love, everything you have, every hope, and every dream. And that child gets to an age where they're like, I want nothing to do with you. Only a parent knows what that's like. I remember looking at my nephew one day and I was like, what happened to the days when you would gaze up at me and be like, you're the most beautiful, why is this woman? Now everything I say you Google. I don't know, baby. I don't know. I don't know nothing now. You know what I'm saying? And whenever they call me, that's why I picture God, like only a parent can come close to what that is. And that whenever my nephews call me, everything stops. When they asking, they, you know what I mean, the invitation for me to be involved in their life, I could be in a meeting, I could be talking to someone, be like, stop. They need me. You know what I'm saying? Because I don't impose, you know what I'm saying? I want to give them their freedom. So I picture God like that. God's like, I'm just waiting for you. I made everybody with self-will and choice. And you've been distracted. I've been here all along with open arms, just waiting for you. And if you trust in me, and if you develop intuition, which is this internal GPS, you know what's interesting? Remember, I said I lived in the world of spirit and the physical world? Alcoholics Anonymous showed me how the spirit world and the physical world can live together. You talked about it in step 10. It tells me you've now entered the world of spirit. I said, wait a minute, I'm not in deep meditation. No, it's now become one in present time. And I become empowered. I become a woman of dignity and integrity and self-respect. You tell me that I now have a brain to use. Isn't that something? Power of choice. I will have inspiration. So I go in collaboration. We have a staff meeting. I call in the morning throughout the day. And at night, I have a new employee. But throughout the day, I'd be like, yo, can I talk to you for a second? I joke sometimes. I still joke about that. My sponsees, I'm like, whenever I have issues with people, I want the higher power from the Old Testament. Me, and we're focusing on God from the New Testament. I like, I'm talking to God from the Old Testament. Can you turn him into a pillar of salt? I'm just saying. My Lord, I get to grow along spiritual lines. I get to uncover, discover, discard. We're in this world and the roles that God assigns. I listen to what my assignments are. I went back to my tradition. We have four generations of priests. I went back and became a priest, you know what I mean? In my tradition. I have literally turned my will and my life over to the care of God. I used to make six figures and run companies, and now I live like Mother Teresa. I got pictures. I was like, this was before. Became saint anyway. Now, I do. I have sponsees that are in the movie industry. They take pictures of me. I'm like, you look like you're visiting the head of lady. I was like, anyway. They're all like, you know, they're posing. Anyway. And I do it willingly. And when I said, God, take all of me, good and bad, where will you have me be, where will you have me be? I am your faithful servant. And I'm here to do whatever you have me do. I did hear that. Sobriety is a gift given to me by God, and what I do is my gift to God. And I've been the caregiver to most of my perpetrators and my abusers. And they have stretched my spiritual muscles. To love than to be loved, to understand than to be understood. I don't have words to describe that level of healing. They're all dead. It's interesting, right? That they all wanted me dead and they're all dead. And I'm here. I practice these 12 steps in every moment of every day that I was with them. I joke and I say, when mommy died, mommy's the last one that just died. So it's my uncle, my brother, my father, a friend of mine, my mother. I've been the caregiver to these people. And I believe mommy lived with me. I took care of mommy all the way till she died. And I believe that when mommy died, I knew it was coming close. I remember saying, when mommy dies, who will I blame for my misery? And I knew we were getting close because she was my greatest teacher. My mother's job was always like, you ain't that spiritual. Watch this. I'm like, you know what? You're right. You know what I'm saying? I be like walking on water, you know, I'm spiritual mommy. Like, yeah, okay. I be like, you got me. Oh my Lord. And I believe that when mommy died, it was like poltergeist for mommy was like, this house is clean. Oh my goodness. The time was coming close because it was so quiet. It was so peaceful between us. There was nothing but pure love. And I knew I had clean house. Only she had put, you know what I mean? And every disturbance, I would just, you know what I mean? Clean house, my brother, clean house. Woo, what freedom. And God gave me that assignment for that reason. After COVID, my partner got disabled. He's completely disabled. I didn't think she was gonna be my assignment. After mommy, I was like, maybe I'll, I don't know, hang out at the beach or something. Nope. So life's been in session for the last 35 years. And certainly I'll be 60 in July. I would say for a good 60 years of my life, it's been a journey. I regret none of it. I do have moments where I tell God I'm handling my resignation letter. I'm like, you're gonna be losing your most trusted servant here on earth. We don't do something drastically. Now, I don't know if it's completely arrogant or it actually moves because a miracle does happen. After I get to that place, I swear, I believe God will be like, do something quick. She's not playing. She's serious right now. I think I've done too much. I'm not being serious. I'm like, you gotta do something. I'm resigning from this. I'm like, quick, dude, just send something. Just send something. Currently, I am a student. I went back to school. We were talking about that. I went back to school. It's for me. It's for fun. I have a trade. I am a priest. I give my life to God. My life is all laid out. I can't work for anybody, do anything, only God. And I go to school and I have fun. I graduated in May 18th, which is actually my brother's birthday, in sociology and religious studies as a major. I have relationships with my professors and my classmates, and I practice what we do here in these rooms, in school. And I just love learning. Like I tell the professor all the time, I say, well, you know, professor, I have more questions than I do statements. And every time I go to class, he's talking about an open mind, he'd be like, you know, wow. I'll say this real quick. I remember one of the classes we were talking about energy, and the professor said, we can't tell you what energy is. We can only tell you what it does. And I was like, I beg your pardon? What'd you just say? We can't tell you what energy is. We can only tell you what it does. Maybe a physicist can try to explain it, but we have yet to be able to define energy. What? So life's been in session for me. I have new adjectives today, like PTSD, fibromyalgia, menopause, anxiety, depression. Now after mommy, all of a sudden, broken heart syndrome. That's an experience. I thought it was a metaphor. It's a real thing. I was tripping. I was like, behind mommy? But anyway, that's a whole story. I've been financially broken. I've shared it from many podiums. That I've traveled the world without a dime in my pocket and don't know how anything's gonna get paid. I'm on the brink of bankruptcy most of the time, and I'm grateful I build it back up again. This one old timer said, don't even look at your FICO score no more. But somehow, some way, the roof remains over my head and food in my stomach and clothes on my back. I've had moments such as yourself saying, you know what, I'm gonna do what other people do, like run on self-will and have dream boards and stuff and go on a mission and fulfill whatever hope they have. Maybe I got the wrong higher power. The other night, driving to a meeting, I said to myself, you know what, Teresa, you go ahead and do that and see what happens. And then I go over there on that side with you guys and find out you were lying all along. You make it seem like it's fun, but it ain't. And I'd be like, man, I done messed up. So today, I am just grateful that I've been given a shot. I've been given a shot with the use of these tools so that I know that living just might not be so bad. And I work these 12 steps for what? I build this relationship with this power for what? Just to be sober? You give me a purpose. My purpose is to stay sober and carry a message. You give me meaning in life. To give it away. To help other alcoholics. What a great gift to be of service. God is a show off when I give him permission. It takes a girl like me, unloved, unwanted, unnecessary, and insignificant, picks me up, builds me up so I can come here and tell you what that power can do. You can't tell me there isn't a God in this program that don't work. And I'll tell you the miracle that happens around me. When my daddy took his last breath, and I am daddy's little girl, I don't have words to describe what that was like as I watched my dad take his last breath. I don't have words to describe what that was like to see that machine go flat when my brother had that cardiac arrest and I didn't resuscitate. I don't have words to express as mommy gasps for her last breath in her ear, or my uncle as he died off. Don't have words to describe any of that, but I will tell you this: not a thought occurred to me to jerk. Not a thought. That is the miracle that happens around here without any effort on my part. The problem had been removed. Isn't that something? A drunk like me. I don't know what's going to happen in my life. I don't know what's going on. Feels like sometimes I'm in a tsunami. If anybody's ever been caregiving and when people die and you have all their stuff and you've paid all kinds of things and they got no insurance and you have to, I don't even have words. I don't know if I'm going to write a book one day on this. The devastation. Don't know what's going to happen. I've been in a tsunami. Just got on the shore and everybody's dead. And everything is broken around me. It doesn't seem like there's any pieces to even repair. But I still feel a sense of freedom and peace on the inside. And I know that. As I told you, a lot of things have been taken away from me without my permission. Right now, they've taken away my line of credit. They're closing down my credit cards. You know what I mean? Everything's on the brink of being shut off. They could take that away without my permission. But there's something that y'all gave me that nobody could take away from me. That's my sobriety. That is mine. That's mine. You can't take it away. Nobody can. That's the little girl in me. That is mine. And if you knew, I don't know if you feel that way about your sobriety, but I do. This is mine. You can't take it away. No matter what you do, no matter what anybody does to me, this is mine. It is mine to polish, to nourish, to expand upon it, to enlarge upon it. It is mine to give away. And it is only I who will throw it away. And I'm not doing it because this is the only thing I got. This is the only thing I got that you can't touch. It is the only thing that I have that is so useful, that is beyond explanation of the magnitude of the gift that it provides me and thousands of other people. I will not let it be taken. No. I don't know what you're going to do, but I know what I'm going to do. That's what some old times say. I don't know what you're going to do, but this is what we have done. And if you want what we have, then you do what we do. I thank you for allowing the God in you to help discover the God in me. So that I, in return, can do the same for others. If nobody told you they love you today, I really, really do. As much as you believe I've come here to do something for you, you've done everything for me. You helped me to get out of me. Even though my phone rings like Central Office. I feel broken. I feel tired. I feel exhausted. My body aches. I look at the numbers and I'm frightened. I have a partner that needs to be fed and given insulin. But I never feel lonely. Never feel like I'm in trouble. Because Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a relationship with this power that is everything. So again, I love you guys so, so much. I thank each and every one of you for doing the 12-step call on me. I wish you a wonderful day, a wonderful week, and let's just keep coming back. Thank you.